IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 52 of the Killing It Podcast. I'm Carl, and I guess I don't have to ask where everybody is.
Everybody at home.
Not just everybody on the show. Everybody in the world.
The whole world is at home. The funny thing is, so Sharon and I started video calling people the other night just for fun. And I said, I was like, well, I know where everybody is. I know they're going to pick up.
You can't pretend you're not home.
Right. It's I know you're there. And it's my two tips for everybody who are stuck at home. Like, get your phone and start video calling people you haven't talked to in ages, because you know they're home and you know they have nothing going on.
Exactly.
It is a blast to catch up.
They might be bored.
And then the other cool thing we've been doing is you can catch online concerts. There's tons of musicians that are doing live streaming like all of the time. And there's schedules now going up online where you can catch a live concert from your living room. It's pretty cool.
Very cool. So we are joined today by a very special guest. Marie Rourke is the Channel Chief Strategist at White Fox Marketing. Welcome. I'm assuming you're at home.
Hello, gentlemen. Yes, I am at home. I am in my she shed, which I'm so thankful for, that I built about a year and a half ago. Well, I didn't build it, let's be honest, but I did buy it, and it's worked out great.
And Ryan, hanging out, doing nothing?
Yeah, you know, hanging out in the midst of a office reorganization and remodeling project, because what I learned was it was good for prior use, but it needs some serious modern technology upgrades for all of this heavy use. Although we did have a family chat amongst all of my extended siblings and whatnot the other day, and we all determined that this weekend we're going to go on a vacation to the upstairs balcony. And you got to reserve.
We're deciding where to do spring break on our end. So which part of the house is going to be spring break?
Yeah, my sister has 1 acre where her house sits, and I was like, oh, imagine the luxury of being able to wander around the backyard.
See, we're hosting a virtual party. We're going to try setting up all of our webcam stuff, because we have a lot of it, clearly. And we're going to set it up in our home bar, and we're going to have some of our friends come through. We're going to try this chaos out. I will report back.
That sounds awesome. Okay, well, so we have a very odd and different program today, only because we kind of like the three-person format. So I'm going to introduce our first topic, and then I'm going to take a back seat. So one of the things that really struck us was 31st birthday of the web, and Tim Berners-Lee, who is widely regarded as the founder of the World Wide Web, the creator of the web, came out with a public letter about basically, we need to set the tone for the next 30 years, and we need to do a much better job of making it a place that's safe and useful and friendly for women and girls. Take it away.
Well, I'll kick us off, because that's why we brought Marie, because we are all self-aware enough to go, three dudes sitting around talking about women seemed like a horrible idea. So we said, let's mix it up. But I was really struck by this, because I've been thinking a lot these days, and as I'm trying to think about things other than what's going on in the world. If I'm thinking about the use of technology, it's done some really incredible stuff. But one of the things I've always liked about Tim Berners-Lee recently is I'm big on his contract for the web, and it puts forth some framework for thinking about using these technologies to specifically call out these problems around the way rights are not applied consistently. Did really strike me. And I was thinking a lot about, hey, where do we need to focus our attention here, particularly as we think about it sort of from a workplace perspective? You know, what do we need to do both to be better at this? Because if we want to serve all customers, that means we need to think about all customers. That's not just like white dudes. That's the larger bit of like, hey, there's more women than men. We got to make sure it's appropriate there. We need to think about it from that perspective.
The women are making a lot of the decisions.
Yes.
and holding on to that.
And in my personal life too.
That was what I was implying.
Right. what I would hope we might be able to think about was the, like, you know, in a way, it's what's the practical thinking on this? Because at a big level, it makes perfect sense. Like the, you know, 51% of customers are women. You should be thinking about that. 51% of your workforce potential is women. We know that skews differently in tech. You know, what were you thinking when you heard this?
Well, from the standpoint of you know, what you know, the web being the 31 years we're doing this, you know, that they're having the anniversaries and whatnot, I think that we've come a long way, but we have so much more to do. There's so much more to do to level the playing field still and to build awareness. And I would say right now in this environment that we're forced to work from home, I mean, we're getting asked to go to the schools and pick up iPads for our children. And I have two young girls, and they're going to get an iPad to take home now that we have to control and we have to be in front of. And I think there's just a lot of security elements to all of this that folks aren't thinking about. And I want to make sure that, you know, we're keeping on top of that, and we're advocating for that as well as advocating for the diversity and inclusion and whatnot is there, because you're going to find a lot of vulnerabilities coming forward.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing that I took away two things. Number one is that it is high time that we as an industry started to pay deliberate attention to this topic. It's not new. It's not like this is a surprise that there are inequalities or that there is abuse or mistreatment online, lack of opportunity, as well as just outright like verbal assault, things that are going on. We've been seeing these things for a long time. But when the industry finally wakes up and says, this is not just a technical issue, it's not just a terms of services type of an issue, now we need to do something about it as policies and procedures, I think that's about high time.
But I do think if you guys revisit the topic again, more so in our industry, and you look to those biases and the, you know, diversity and the diversity of thought that comes from these mixed teams, and now with everybody moving to Zoom and Teams and whatnot, it's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a big deal for people to get comfortable with their voice, with their person. And I think it will take some of that angst off the table for women to be able to interrupt the conversation.
I want to talk more about this at some point. I think we want to revisit this idea of, I don't want women to act like men. I want women to act like women, because that's actually like,
well,
there's
women
this.
Women don't want to act like men. I mean, we, you know, the only thing that we want that you guys want out of work is the same opportunity and the same pay.
Right. You know? But there's this cultural bias idea of like, you have to act like a man to, at some point, I think we ought to explore that, but I'm definitely not prepped for that conversation.
Well, I mean, I do think there are some good examples in the industry that you can point to, the women in technology and women of the channel and those kinds of things. God bless them for starting an early effort. It's not yet solved anything, but the fact that the channel has been proactive about creating events and communities where this is a conversation and where opportunity and equality is discussed, I think we should highlight that and let people know, by the way, we're aware of the fact
that I agree with highlighting it. What you don't want it to do is to do the reverse, right? Where that now we're just like, I will not buy my daughters a t-shirt that say female, the future is female. I won't do it. The future is about us. The future is about all of us, the collective us. And it doesn't matter. I mean, gender should not matter in that sense. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think a lot of the frustration and the reason that, you know, people are advocating for what they're advocating for. And I think you're seeing more voices come to the future is us versus the future is female, is because we got to go together. I have to have you as an advocate. You have to have me as an advocate. It can't be one-sided.
Oh, totally. I think the other thing is, I don't want to talk all, you know, COVID all the time, but what's interesting is that we're having an interesting time where we're thinking about things as a system level. I'm hopeful that coming out on the other side of this, as we have a moment of taking the time to think about things on a system level rather than an individual level, that's where we should be focusing our attention, is how do we make changes to the systems that are around this? And I mean systems not in the technical sense, but in the process, procedure, culture of this. How do we do that stuff? Does that, And I think that's the struggle is to make it less about an individual case and more about doing it to exactly your point is, can we make this more individual or more level playing field?
Yeah. And I mean, I will take it to another level, right? Like there is tremendous opportunity for good when we leverage the internet and its capabilities for commerce, for communication, and for community, right? You can connect people all around the world. You can make sure that information is available readily to everybody. Education is the most valuable asset that we can create out of this. But you can also do business. And we've seen, you know, from continent to continent, micro loans businesses and coaching mentoring programs for small startup businesses. And some of those initiatives have been deliberately focused to the benefit of women and girls. But for everyone that gets a little bit of a headline that says, you know, congratulations, let's pat ourselves on the back for doing one thing good among 1,000 things that are Neanderthal, I think we just need to make sure that people don't get content and assume, well, you've got a web connection and therefore your access is just the same as mine. It's not. And anybody who's ever been in a gaming community platform, anybody that's ever been in the comments section on any public website, you know for a fact this is not a safe and open environment for men and women equally. And I just think we need to make sure that as an industry, right, bring this down local to professionals in the channel, you need to make sure that you have terms and policies in place for abuse. You need to make sure that you have all of these resources that you're thinking of proactively, because Marie made the point. This is about to be times 100 in terms of the frequency that people encounter these types of situations.
So to make this a little concrete and a little ending bit, I'm going to kick Marie. I'm going to ask, give you the chance to sort of weigh in on the final point. Is we always like to make things a little practical. You know, if I hand you the magic wand and say like what would be the thing people need to sort of focus on first? I'm not saying it's the only, but where would you sort of guide us all collectively to say think about this first?
I think it starts with awareness, just where we would start with any sort of campaign coming from a marketing role on my end. I mean, we're always worried about, you know, what do they not know? And in this case, what we don't know or what we're not sharing about this topic and about where this is headed and potentially, you know, where it's already at and all the biases and the unconscious biases that you talked about, we've got to get awareness out there and generate that voice. And I think with so many people working from home now, and those of us who have the microphones and who have the voices in our own industry, adding this to our agenda is going to be very important as we move forward. It's not negotiable anymore. It's not something we can hide from. It's something that we have to embrace as an industry and really bring awareness to.
Certainly something to take away from this one. So there we go.
All right. So topic number two and three are very much related, but we're going to start with topic number two, which is we're going to post an article here, 10 trends for a post-virus world. And then we want to talk more about introducing a new segment on our show.
Yeah. So particularly right now, and so let's just quickly, I'll baseline it. And you should read this article because it's a big thinker article for a bit. And so what we want to talk a little bit here is the title says it all. It's After the Virus, 10 Consumer Trends for a Post-Coronavirus World. And I love to have this moment of like, okay, what's gonna change? What's post? And what are the trends and interesting things I want to learn and observe right now? I mean, I was riffing even before we were talking about how like I'm intrigued by the way TV is already changing and the way that new things are getting tried, these online music concerts and stuff. That stuff's really cool. The one that really jumped out at me from this article that I thought was really interesting was this idea of the virtual experience economy. This idea of we're all now in a time where we're going to experiment with some really interesting online stuff. We're all forced to be online, but humans are social creatures. And so we like interaction. So we're going to find really creative ways to do it. rocked out on St. Patrick's Day to the Dropkick Murphys live concert. But it was a really interesting experience because not only were they did a live stream concert, it felt like a concert. I turned it up really loud. But what you also had was then the online component where there was, you know, and it was got up to live streaming was 150,000 people all watching it at the same time. So the online component was this interesting crowd experience. If you think about this from the idea of I can now deliver online experiences, you know, one of the French game companies, Ubisoft, has done an upgrade to their Assassin's Creed game, allowing for a discovery tour mode, meaning you can just walk around the ancient Egypt environment that they built. Rather than like fight things or, you know, take on the game, you can just spend time in it. There's a number of museums that are doing online experience that have taken their stuff and they were already doing it. And now they're saying, look, we're closed, but please use our online experience. And because you don't have anything else, what of those are going to last? You know, what are the things that we're going to go, this was a cool thing. I would do that again. Yeah, I want to go to a concert, but I'll go to a virtual concert too.
And you know the quote about, you know, don't let a good crisis go to waste. I am very intrigued about who's in the right place at the right time. And I am not a sports fan at all, but I was going to ask you, in the world of gaming and in the like rotisserie baseball and all that, is there anybody ready to go to ESPN and say, let's create an interactive semi-virtual environment that becomes a permanent piece of the sports world?
Perfect timing, because actually it was I've been doing, who's people who listen to the Business of Tech, I've now been doing sort of an update on COVID stuff, but my focus has really been looking not just for like the basic stuff that I think everyone's getting, but these innovative ideas. NASCAR has already launched, and by the time this show drops, the first one will have just happened. So it's Sunday the 22nd. Their eNASCAR Pro Invitational, they are putting real drivers into simulators and letting them and racing, and they will air that on TV.
Well, that's way better than watching a teenager play a game on their couch.
Well, and that's actually the interesting bit. So, of course, the esports leagues, they converted really easily. I'm a Overwatch fan. Anybody knows that. Overwatch League is running all of their games online. That hasn't changed. They just moved to actually having physical homesteads. They quickly backed that off and doing everything online. But for most people, that's not really approachable in that they don't understand the game. It's difficult to follow if you don't do it. So they have the technology. They have the guidance for it, but they don't have the product necessarily that has that universal appeal. NASCAR's done it. The Phoenix Suns are already playing. They've scheduled all of their games in NBA 2K. Now they don't mean anything. They're just doing them for fun. But if you need a basketball fix, you can watch pro players play video games online. This virtual experience really is going to be something interesting.
Yeah, well, I would go as far as to say we've been experimenting with the idea of remote and virtual experiences, and a small portion of the population has been engaging and enjoying the process, but the vast majority of people still say, I'd rather watch a live basketball game, I'd rather go to the museum, I'd rather do all of these things in the physical presence rather than doing it. I think what we're seeing as a necessity through this process is that many more people are willing to test it and realize, wait, that was actually kind of entertaining. See, I'm with you, Dave. I was super bummed when the Dropkick Murphys concert tour got canceled because, excuse me, the Dropkick Murphys and Rancid, two of my all-time favorite bands, are going on a tour from Boston to Berkeley, and they've canceled all of those shows. And then I was clued in that they were going to do a live remote broadcast on St. Patrick's Day, and I thought, that's not going to be any fun at all. I'm still very disappointed. It was actually not bad. It was actually quite entertaining, and it felt like, frankly, you were not quite in the front row because you could see the band and you could hear when they were talking. It was very interactive. I think they did a good job with it. And while that may not be everybody's cup of tea, it is an example of I think, a lot of experiences that people are going to be willing to test. Just see if you like it. See if it's good. And honestly, from an entrepreneurial perspective, I don't think any of us know what things wouldn't have ever taken root and been successful that now will become successful, because the only thing that justifies a marketplace is the participation of consumers, right?
Well, and the other thing that was interesting was this idea of virtual goods is another one that jumped out at me in this article. And this, you know, and look, people have already figured out I'm an online gamer. I have spent money on things that don't exist. I have spent actual hard currency on in-game skins for characters or virtual items that I use with them. But you can actually now see this, you know, will people buy, bits that are virtual things that you use in conferencing? Anybody who's been on a Zoom call with me recently knows that, like, I have the ability to do, like, graphics in my Zoom stuff, right? Like, and people are always going, like, oh, well, that's super cool, Dave. How do you do that? It's like, well, okay, it's a virtual thing, right? I've invested money in virtual things, but at some level, it's also this quote unquote status symbol that my tech is a little different than everybody else's tech. What virtual goods will end up being valuable coming out? Will people recognize it? Will they then spend money on it? And will it stick around on the other side?
Right. And I think that's a good place to jump off to the last topic, which is actually we want to introduce a new segment with luck. This segment won't last very long, but the segment is our predictions about life after COVID. And to be honest, I think some of the trends that we're seeing are going to become permanent. Number one, I promise you, our industry, right? Let's pull the whole show back into our industry. We will be moving back into people's houses, where 10 years ago, we were telling everybody, get out of the houses and go do small businesses. Well, now those businesses, a lot of them are going to realize, wait, it costs me $3,000 a month less to not go to my office. I'm going to have a home office, and $3,000 a month buys an awful lot of home office, right? So I think that's one huge, huge trend. Second one is, I think we're finally going to teach older Americans how to do things online. They will initiate things online. They will learn how to become part of the delivery process. They will be ordering things they've never ordered before. And so a lot of this is just going to educate both the younger and the older people. And I think the places where you can help your clients are going to be, you know, the world of self-care and Medicare online, or medical care, stress relief, anything related to that, anything related to education. I can totally see how they have these monthly subscription packages. I can see a do-it-yourself construction kit where Home Depot drops something on your front porch, and every month you build another piece of furniture or a shelf or, you know, whatever it might be.
My prediction in this is that the work from home cat is out of the bag. And you cannot put that one back in. There's a bunch of people that have never considered working from home, or companies that have had this culture of never wanting to embrace it. And a lot of workers are going to realize, hey, wait a second. This is not so bad. I spend a lot of time, you know, commuting or expense having to be close to a physical location that is essentially arbitrary. There's going to be a lot of people culturally that come out of this going, yeah, I don't think so. Because look, right now we're recording right now in the sort of, you know, initial bits, right? There's tons of people that haven't figured this stuff out. I've been like laughing, the people that don't, like, I got to help a bunch of people with focus on their cameras or lighting or those kinds of things. But when we get over that hump and people get used to it, and then you've gotten through that initial setup, there's going to be a lot of people that like it, that really like it. And I'm not saying necessarily that it will, that physical offices are dead.
It's not 100% and it's not permanent, right? But if people say, look, I'm just as effective or more effective working remotely 3 days a week.
Yep.
You know, you could be in the office, do the culture, go home 3 days a week, be productive. You know, my daughter has said, look, because she's one of the most productive people in her office, She gets way more work done when she's at home. Like, this is going to be great for her because people don't interrupt her and ask her how to do stuff.
Right. Or the office becomes a place for coming in midday and you get some collaborative time, or it's much more like liquid and fluid in terms of the interactions. That's my big thing on this, is I think that's going to change a lot.
See, I would highly endorse that. And both of you guys have touched on the idea of the remote work. I think that absolutely will continue. The good news that I've seen so far in the midst of it all is how proactively our industry, especially managed service providers and the people who sell security software, how proactive they're being about trying to educate their customers about, please run a VPN, please make sure that you have some fundamentals
right,
of security in place. Yeah, that is a gaping hole in the work at home reality, because there's going to be tremendous vulnerability, but I do think it's going to stick around. I will say my prediction, it kind of comes on a number of levels, but I will say e-retail will become a built-in part of the world. I was reading just yesterday, there were in the world of grocery delivery, right? You can go online, shop at your grocery store, select all of your goods, and that stuff will show up at your house. Prior to all of the virus-related activities that are going on, less than 10% of Americans had done that particular activity. But just in the past week, an additional 20% of Americans, so we're up to about a third, that have now done it. And my prediction is that will absolutely survive. It will be for groceries. It will be for shoes and clothing. It will be for consumer goods at a number of levels. Retail will be permanently altered in the sense that the in-store experience will be just that. It will be showcasing, showrooming, and participation with the devices. But the transaction, I think, is going to go aggressively online. And Carl, I think you touched on it. The biggest piece of that shift is not Gen Z and the millennials that are already very comfortable with that kind of digital commerce. It's the 75-year-old parents that we've already had on both sides of our household who have initiated FaceTime calls in the past week. Now, not just joined, not just been willing to deal with this newfangled thing, they initiated the call and it worked just fine. And now their minds are being opened to, wait a minute, why do I need to go to the grocery store if they could bring it to me? Why do I need to go to the shopping mall, park, hike, fight the crowds, do all that stuff if I can just do this remotely? I think you're going to cross a tipping point of what people are willing to experiment with, and it's going to have permanent implications for the retail industry.
Well, and I think some of the things that you're going to see is like, who are the winners and who are the losers, right? Amazon, as far as I can tell, is going to win huge, because not only can I get toilet paper delivered to my house, but I can put in a subscription and now all of my regular stuff just gets, you know, I get used to it just showing up on the front porch, and then I just continue that.
They're well positioned to survive it too. Like just from a, you know,
well, and I don't want to, we're hiring 100,000 people.
Right. But they have their cash. I mean, you know, and I don't want to do tons of business stuff here, but you know, companies that are built, that have a cash reserves, that are well built and top say three in a particular space are going to do really well. It's the weaker companies that are going to go and struggle. But right. But I think you're right on the all the shopping trends, all the virtual stuff. Like a lot of people are going to really embrace that stuff.
Yeah, and I think where you're going, right? I think that there will be a lot of surprises, right? What we do not yet know is just how many innovative ideas are about to launch that we're going to say, why didn't I think of that, and how did we ever live without that? That is the way we feel about our smartphones, about the online conferencing platforms that we're using. We all look at that and think, geez, how did you ever live without that? Well, there's about to be a dozen really interesting things, and I'm really looking forward to it, because, you know, desperation, as they say, is the mother of invention. And I believe there are going to be some creative technology professionals who launch some stuff that might never have been viable before and is about to be really interesting. So I think that's why this segment is something we should keep coming back to highlight that kind of innovation and the way that we are rising to the challenge and to solve problems.
Just a note, if in the middle of all this, somebody invents a time machine, remind me to go back to February 15th and buy Zoom stock.
All right. Well, when I work on that, but a quick plug, if you're not listening to my Business of Tech Daily News podcast, I've been doing a roundup of these news and announcements. But one of the filters that I've really been applying to the news is I'm looking for technology related companies that are doing interesting things. And I just sort of comment on it. For example, like that NASCAR story is in my roundup, because I think it's interesting, and I want people to be not just taking this element, you know, these news articles of, oh my God, it's gloom and doom. There's actually some really interesting moves. Technology and big companies are leading in some of their choices of the way they're executing. There's a lot to learn here, and there's a lot to watch. But by the way, it's happening really fast. So I'm doing just a list of they did this, they did this, they did this, so that we can start looking for the trends over time.
Right. And we need to, we're pretty much out of time here, but we're going to revisit this again and again, not every week, I promise you.
No.
Because we will get sick of it. But we want to look to the future with, a positive attitude and realize, you need to start preparing now for the day that people come back out of their houses with their wallets open, ready to spend money, right? How are you going to serve them? Right. Luckily, to be honest, in the IT industry, we've got a lot of money to make while people are moving into their houses, and we'll have more money to make when they decide to stay there.
Absolutely. Lots of help out there for this is technology's time to shine.
All righty. And that will do it for episode 52 of the
Killing It
podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.